Central Time. You're tuned to WILL Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn. Jason Croft is our technical director. A severe thunderstorm watch has been issued for central Illinois and central Missouri. It remains in effect until 8 p.m. this evening. In the WILL severe weather coverage area, these counties are included in the severe thunderstorm watch: Champaign, Christian, Clark, Coles, Cumberland, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Logan, Macon, McLean, Moultrie, Piatt, Sangamon, Shelby, and Vermilion. And a flash flood watch continues in the WILL severe weather coverage area for Ford, Iroquois, Livingston, and McLean counties until late tonight. Stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest on the weather.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Radio Maria Restaurant in downtown Champaign, now serving tapas every afternoon and evening until 2 a.m., along with their regular dinner and brunch menus and hours. Radio Maria has a wide selection of spirits and wine, including 35 wines by the glass and 27 draft beers. More information is available at RadioMariaRestaurant.com. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Illinois, hosting a lifelong learning program developed specifically for adults over 50. Additional information on programs available by email at olli@uiuc.edu.
It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock. Today, the afternoon magazine features an interview from the AM 580 archives. Since it's a recorded interview, we won't be taking phone calls this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.uiuc.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. The Illinois legislature was the scene of an intense fight over ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Leading the charge against the ERA at the State House in Springfield, Phyllis Schlafly, founder of the Eagle Forum and Stop ERA, organizations that she has built on to remain a force in American politics. On the program today, we'll talk with historian Donald Critchlow about Phyllis Schlafly, her politics, and her brand of American conservatism. Donald Critchlow is the author of the political biography Phyllis Schlafly and Grassroots Conservatism, A Woman's Crusade. In the book, Critchlow makes the case that Schlafly's life parallels the rise of conservatism in America over the course of the last half of the 20th century. Our guest is the author of 13 books, including Intended Consequences, Birth Control, Abortion, and the Federal Government in Modern America. The editor of the Journal of Policy History, he is a professor of history at St. Louis University. His new book, Phyllis Schlafly and Grassroots Conservatism, A Woman's Crusade, is published by the Princeton University Press. Professor Critchlow, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. What a fascinating character you portray in this new book of yours. And this book grew out of research you did for that book I mentioned, Intended Consequences. Published in 1999, it led you to look into the history of grassroots conservatism. When and how did you begin to see Phyllis Schlafly's life story as paralleling the rise of this type of American conservatism?
Well, after, I'm suffering from a little cold, like everybody at this time of year. After I wrote on birth control and abortion, I became interested in the grassroots right, and I was looking around as for a topic as a way of looking at the subject, and I realized that Phyllis Schlafly lived in the same town I did, and so it I read a biography of her, and a short biography, and I decided that she might be a good way of understanding the great political transformation we've undergone in the last 30 years in this country.
Hmm. What are her insights? How does she see that transformation?
I think that's probably a question you should ask her. But I think she's seen that there's been a shift to the Reich in this country, and that there's what was once on the fringe has now become within the mainstream.
Yeah. How did you approach her about this project, and what was her response?
Well, I wrote her a letter and told her I wanted to write a political biography of her, and she phoned me and suggested that we have lunch, and we met, and I had given her copies of my other books, and I told her that I was a professional historian and would bring critical methods to the subject, but she was quite open and allowed me, I think surprisingly, full access to her very extensive archival papers, and then which I supplemented with looking at 60 other archival collections throughout the country, including papers of many of her opponents.
Yeah. When you wrote the book's acknowledgments, you wrote that you suspected there would be things in the book that she would like and things that she would disagree with. What were your suspicions at the time, and have you spoken with her since the publication, and has she read the book?
Yes, she has read the book now. When I wrote that, I thought that she would like having a biography about herself. It recognizes her place in history. I think there are a number of things that she would disagree with. I'm critical in a number of areas, and including her views on foreign policy, as well as her kind of her understanding of how her opponents operated, especially on in the kind of on the elite level.
Why has Phyllis Schlafly been so successful in promoting her conservative agenda?
I think her real strength is that she's able to take complex arguments and articulate them to average Americans. And I think that's been one of her key to her successes. She's kind of a Tom Paine, if you will, on the right. Of course, her opponents think that she simplifies complex questions, but this ability to talk to average Americans is really a talent that she has. But I also think that there was she came along at a time when there was a beginnings of a political shift in this country. There was by the 1960s and in the 70s there was a general perception that New Deal liberalism had failed. And then she also came along at a time when social issues such as abortion and Equal Rights Amendment and prayer in school had become major concerns for many traditionally minded religious people, including Christians and Mormons and Jews. And she just tapped into this. So that was important in her success.
Mm. You know, when we think of Phyllis Schlafly, I suspect most of us think of her role in helping defeat the ERA, particularly in Illinois. But her involvement in politics stretches back farther than the 70s and 80s. She was a grassroots anti-communist in the 1950s. She ran for Congress in 1952. What led her to politics?
Well, the extent of her political activities are what surprised me. She had a very long political career as an activist before the ERA fight, and I think that helped prepare her for the ERA fight. She became interested in politics as an undergraduate at Washington University in St. Louis, which she worked her way through while working a full time job in a munitions factory, testing ammunition through firing machine guns, which is kind of an interesting career for her. She took a political science class and suddenly became enraptured with politics. And then she went to Harvard for MA in political science, and then later to Washington, D.C.
Mm. And she married, and she and her husband, John, had six children.
Well, Fred.
Oh, Fred. I'm sorry. How did I manage that one? Okay.
I don't know.
You know, and one of the things that, you know, comes to mind, you mentioned, you know, she's an educated woman. She was a working woman. She's spent so much time campaigning for her various causes. How does she respond when she's asked about that, why she spent so much time out of the home campaigning for, as she might put it, the privilege of staying home?
Well, I think, Celeste, that she did most of her early political activity in her home. That was interesting to me. She had a large family, and she was a homemaker, and she did a lot of her work at night after the kids had been put to bed. I think her involvement in politics is really kind of this belief in what she's doing is right. I think there's a certain fortitude that she has, that and determination that appears early in her childhood. She's a very, very driven driven woman, and I think that's led some feminists to see her as a kind of anti-feminist feminist. I don't agree with that characterization, but she's achieved what a lot of women wanted to do in the post-war period, that is, have a career, be politically active, and raise a family.
Mm. She was born into a modest middle-class Catholic family. What were her parents' politics?
She was born in 1924 in St. Louis, and her father was had lost his job in the Depression, and the mother went to work eventually at the art museum in St. Louis. I don't think they were very politically conscious, although they were Republicans, which is interesting in a very Democratic city such as St. Louis, and a heavily Catholic city such as St. Louis. They were Republicans. And that was there was a time when, I won't go into the details of the history of this, but there was a shift in Catholic votes in the 1896, and they were part of that that shift to the Republicans. And then during the New Deal, a number of Catholics rejoined the Democratic Party.
Hmm. What would you like to tell us about her childhood?
Well, I think what was important about her childhood is that she was very determined from a very early age, and that came across in her diaries. She started keeping when she was her diary 8 years old. So I had an opportunity to read her diary from that she kept all the way through college, and it gave me good insight into her. She was driven to do well and to succeed, and she grew up in a very very loving family as well. And both of her parents instilled upon in Phyllis and her sister a sense that it was important to be educated as women and to have independent careers. And I think that's interesting, given it was a very traditional Catholic family.
Hmm. What insights did you come across in your research into the evolution of her worldview?
I think one of the most fascinating aspects I found was that when she was at Harvard University, she was pursuing a master's in political science. She was a Republican, but she was a Wendell Willkie Republican, which meant that she was internationalist. She supported the United Nations and the founding of the United Nations. In fact, she wrote a term paper at Harvard on the use of the United Nations military and called for the United Nations to have its own army. And when she went to Washington after graduating with her MA, she went to work at the Institute of the American Enterprise Institute, and there her politics shifted to the right, and she stopped being an internationalist, as we as those who know her realize today.
Yeah. One of the ways you describe her as being is as a moral populist. Could you talk about that?
Yes. Well, I think there's. I think it took me a while to figure out her. You know, the mindset of Phyllis Schlafly and her followers. It was a different mindset than mine as a historian, and I realized that there was. That basically what drove Phyllis Schlafly, as well as her followers, was this kind of was a religious faith, and there was this there was this kind of moralism, and moralism not only in concerned about moral issues such as abortion and equal rights and prayer in school, but a sense of but basically they view the world in moral terms, and in doing that they also were suspicious of the powers that be in this country, in both the Republican and Democratic parties. So there's this kind of us against them mentality, which translates into the rhetoric of a populist rhetoric.
Mm. One of the things that strikes me as one of her strengths is her, and I suppose we could argue about whether it's a strength or not, but is her certainty. You know?
Yes, right. I tried interviewing. I would like to tell your listeners a kind of interesting story. I tried interviewing Phyllis Schlafly, but she took, you know, in a kind of formal interviews with. Tape recorder running, but I found that she was she would put on her public persona, which is pretty stiff and formal and circumspect. And so, what I decided to do was occasionally catch her in the halls. I was given a small office at Eagle Forum in St. Louis, and would occasionally catch her and show her a document and ask what she thought of it. And as I got to know her, I asked her, how do you take all of the slings and arrows that your opponents have set upon you? And she said, well, it's my belief in God. And I think that she really is certain that she's doing God's will. And you know, so I think that's a strength, and for those who oppose her politics, they also see it as a kind of too certain of herself, I would say.
Yeah. What is she like in an unguarded moment with the public persona tucked away somewhere?
Well, I think she has, one of the things I learned was that she does have a very good sense of humor, and she's able to laugh at herself, and I think the sense of humor has gone, goes a long way in sustaining her her activities as well. She's also incredibly driven, and she's a workaholic. I've just never seen anyone work as hard as she does. It's a full-time commitment. So she's 82 years old, and she's still going strong. I think she told me that last year she gave over 200 interviews and lectures across the country. And her mind is still functioning, and she's extremely articulate.
Well, we got a news release today in the newsroom, January 4th, 2006, offering her as an interview about the Alito nomination. And also, she's very happy to talk about her latest book, The Supremacists, The Tyranny of Judges and How to Stop It.
Well, so she does still know how to promote herself, yeah. I would say that.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Historian Donald Critchlow is our guest this afternoon. His latest book, Phyllis Schlafly in Grassroots Conservatism, A Woman's Crusade. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon. Join the discussion with a question or a comment. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener now on line one in Champaign County. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. One thing, I was in the St. Louis area, and I heard on the public station down there a Schlafly dedicating that day of programming to his wife. And I'm just wondering how many of her children are actually sort of more liberal. And there is the case of the one who's kind of the that was gay. I don't know if he was out a lot or was. How that affected her certitude and whether maybe those are the same people, I'm not sure. But I've also have a further question about the history of her history in the St. Louis area. She's actually from Alton, I recall, but I guess her offices are in St. Louis. Did she have any interaction with the Globe Democrat, which was the right-wing paper that folded down there, that Buchanan was a longtime columnist, Patrick Buchanan, and whether you looked into those kind of links? I mean, does she have a regular column in the Globe Democrat? I don't remember looking at it, but I don't remember actually her byline. And was she more? You just said she was quite the publicist. Wondering whether she contributed in op-eds a lot, and was that if she worked at the Heritage Foundation? That's one of the things that they urge people to do. So I'd just like for you to comment on those, and I'm going to go back to a couple of other things I'm doing here. So I'll just listen on the air. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much for the question. The first question had to do with her children, and all of her children are quite successful. One's a doctor, and I guess three are lawyers. And they're all very politically conservative. In fact, some of them are to the right of Phyllis Schlafly. And on some issues, which I think is I think that's fascinating in itself, that the entire family is quite conservative. She grew up in St. Louis, and after she married, she moved to Alton, Illinois. She's after the death of her husband in 1994. She moved back to St. Louis. She has an office in St. Louis in Clayton, Missouri, as well as an office in Alton, Illinois, in which her son John works at. And she's there used to be a newspaper, the Democratic Globe. It was an afternoon newspaper. It was a conservative newspaper. And she won Woman of the Year, an annual award from that newspaper. She did write op-ed pieces for the Globe Democrat, mostly on defense issues at that point. She was very, very involved in nuclear balance and nuclear strategy issues, writing books that sold in the hundreds of thousands, written to the grassroots anti-communist.
Mm. And the caller also mentioned her son, who, as I recall, was outed by a gay activist. And he asked about how did that affect her, and did that change her view, her certainty of, you know, what's right and what's wrong?
Well, her son was outed. He's very conservative. He's He continues to believe in family values and kind of that as a political movement. I think that when Phyllis Schlafly's very devoted to her family, and she's never written about homosexual gay issues other than opposing same-sex marriage. So these kinds of personal sexual issues weren't issues that she was involved in the first place.
Interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, historian Donald Critchlow, talking this afternoon about Phyllis Schlafly, her politics and her brand of American conservatism, and her impact in the rise of conservatism in America over the course of the last half of the 20th century. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. When and how did she first come to national attention?
She gained national attention when she ran for Congress in 1952, winning the Republican primary in the Alton district. She ran against the East St. Louis Republican Party machine in 1952. That there was a Republican Party machine in East St. Louis is, I think, it can only be seen as curious today. She gained national attention as a housewife from Alton, who won the running for Congress. And I think then she reemerges in 1964 when she writes a book on promoting Barry Goldwater's campaign to win the Republican nomination. And that book was A Choice Not an Echo, which sold 3.5 million or 4 million copies.
Very interesting. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Paris, Illinois, line 4. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Super. In 1984, I used to work for Ronald Reagan, so we had a lot of experience with what I'd call grassroots conservatives. And she was kind of a leading role model for a lot of people. I saw a lot of women get involved in organizing conservatives. I thought that she really was kind of a lightning rod, but what I liked about her was her articulation of issues. And she took a lot of heat, and she was tough. I wondered if that's part of her resiliency, is that she's just so tough, is driven, you know, and knows what she wants to do and just has not gone off message in all the years that I've heard from her, and also the effect that Ronald Reagan's presidency had on her and on conservative people today.
Good questions.
Yeah, those are very, very good questions, and thank you. Yes, I think I have to say that Phyllis Schlafly is one of the toughest people I've ever met, men, male or female. And she's just able to shrug off sometimes very personal attacks on her. And I think that that she has her, and for that reason, she's attracted a sizable following, as well as a large number of people who just absolutely dislike Phyllis Schlafly, and when they even when they hear the word. And I, as an aside, I might say I asked a friend when I was thinking about writing a political biography of this would in my academic career, and he said it probably would. That's how much Phyllis Schlafly's disliked in some circles, but the book is has done very well. I think the Reagan presidency was, you know, the culmination of a long campaign that goes back to '64, and that reflects in that in 1960s it wasn't just student anti-war protesters and civil rights activists that were at work, but also very committed conservatives. And so while the while the left radicals kind of fade out in the '70s, the conservatives continue to work and build a grassroots movement that finally leads to the election of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and 1984, and re-election in 1984.
Does the caller want to follow up? No, oh, he's gone. Okay. Good questions. That leads me to ask you a couple of questions about the campaign of Ronald Reagan. And in the book, you note that following the 80 election, Phyllis Schlafly said Reagan won by, quote, riding the rising tides of the pro-family movement and the conservative movement. And she said that the Stop ERA organization that she had built had built the pro-family and conservative movements. You want to talk about the impact Phyllis Schlafly has had on the conservative agenda and electoral politics in recent history?
Well, I think the to put this in a larger historical perspective, after Watergate and Richard Nixon's resignation in 1974, the Republican Party had become a distinct minority party. There were only approximately 25% of the electorate who declared themselves Republican. And many within the Republican Party itself spoke openly of the party going the way of the Whig Party. In other words, an extinct party. And within that Republican Party, the conservatives were isolated. They were they were dismayed by Nixon's foreign policy, his opening to China, détente policy with the Soviet Union, the SALT I arms limitation treaty, the as well as his domestic policies that they thought were liberal.
Yeah, and you tell a story in the book that I found quite amazing, that when Ronald Reagan was campaigning for the White House, his campaign set up what it called a Women's Policy Board. And
yes,
the appointees were pro-ERA and pro-choice. And that set Phyllis Schlafly on fire. And it wasn't long before she had Reagan's attention. You want to tell us the rest of the story?
Yes, well, she was very upset when she saw the appointees. She had been appointed to a defense advisory board, and she immediately brought this up with Reagan, and that board was shifted with pro anti-ERA and pro-life representation. And I think this was going to be a concern with the social conservatives when Ronald Reagan was in office, that he wasn't active enough on these so-called social and cultural issues.
Hmm. How influential was she and her allies in the Reagan administration?
I think she was. She had some. Some influence, because, and she had a number of meetings with Ronald Reagan brought to the White House, and I think this is important for your listeners to understand while Phyllis Schlafly has unique abilities of her own, she also represents a sizable constituency of Americans that are out there, and her Eagle Forum today claims 40,000-50,000 members, but they're involved in state politics, and it's great grassroots activists on the right as well as on the left that are important in winning elections and pressuring Congress in voting. So We live in a democracy, so the grassroots are important.
Yeah, and her successes in grassroots activism, have they had had an impact on the larger political landscape? Have they had an impact on the Democratic Party over time?
Well, I think she's had the grassroots activism has clearly had an influence on politics, in that we see a shift in the Republican Party to the right, and many conservatives now in fact, the Republican Party has become a voice of conservatism in this country, and it's evident in congressional elections. I think that the power of the grassroots shouldn't be underestimated.
Mm. Most recently, we saw her in the conservative flash fire over President Bush's nomination of Harriet Myers to succeed Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor.
Mm-hmm.
How influential is she in conservative politics today?
Well, she was at the last convention. She was Republican convention. She was described by the New York Times as the voice of the Republican right. I think she's important. She was playing a major role in keeping first in drafting the pro-life amendment. She and Henry Hyde had written that pro-life amendment. There's been attempts to change it within the GOP, and she continues to defend that the pro-life plank. I think she's also important in mobilizing grassroots when you have nominees. She, in fact, held her fire with the Harriet Meyer nomination. There were other conservatives that attacked Myers early, and finally she came out and opposed Meyer. And I think that at that point there was... She withdrew her nomination, not because of Phyllis Schlafly,
right.
But I think that the tides had just turned so much against her that that nomination was not going to go through.
Man, the pressure became insurmountable. The barriers to her being approved for the position,
which I think also, if I may, Celeste,
yeah.
It reveals a tension between Republicans in office and the Bush administration with his constituency, especially social conservatives represented by Phyllis Schlafly. And I think that's always important to keep in mind that in office politicians and our representatives often have to take different positions. But there's always been a somewhat unease with both Bushes among the social conservatives.
Yeah, I don't think Phyllis Schlafly was a fan of George Herbert Walker Bush as Ronald Reagan's running mate.
And I don't. I think she held off endorsing the current president as well.
Hmm. You know, in Illinois today, we have a deeply divided state Republican Party. Some in the party are trying to pull things together now to challenge the incumbent governor, Democrat Rod Blagojevich. What are your thoughts about the push and pull of conservatives and moderates in state Republican politics today?
Well, this is out of my area of expertise.
Okay.
I don't follow Illinois politics very closely at all. I think everybody knows that the Republicans are in bad shape in Illinois, but I think this I would say generally the voice of conservatism and conservative Republican politics is going to be with us into the foreseeable future. At present, as I don't think I'm saying anything too insightful here, but we have a very divided electorate among those people who are voting and among the activists. And when you have this kind of closeness in elections, it allows constituencies, as represented by Phyllis Schlafly and others on the left, to have a greater voice, because those are the people that are useful in turning out the vote, and so it gives rise to even a kind of more polarized rhetoric in Democratic politics. At the same time, it's more people voted in the last election That is a greater percentage of the electorate than in a long time. So there's something good about having these fierce, full-throated political debates, I think.
Have in the nation's history, have we seen other figures like Phyllis Schlafly, other grassroots movements that have, you know, really pushed the political dialogue, the agenda along? Have we seen this before?
Yes, I think, first of all, she represents this kind of moral Republican with a small r tradition. And we've had moral crusades in the past. We obviously think of Prohibition, but in the early 19th century, the Whig Party had a very active evangelical wing that was shifted the Whigs toward moral issues, temperance and prohibition of Sunday mail, but also anti-slavery, and women were very active in the Whig Party, often running for school boards and taking moral issues in their local communities. And similarly, in the late 19th century, women and moral crusaders were involved in not only the temperance movement, but federal legislation to ban lotteries. They tried to pass a marriage amendment. There was a fear in the 1880s that divorce rate was going up. So we see these kinds of similar moral movements. And they had their representative figures at that time, too. So I don't think, in other words, I don't think Phyllis Schlafly is anything is new in American politics. But I think the difference is that we now see a well-articulated conservatism in this country, which is something I think is unique.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Donald Critchlow, our guest this afternoon. His latest book, Phyllis Schlafly and Grassroots Conservatism, A Woman's Crusade. A few minutes left in this portion of the program. We invite your telephone calls this afternoon. Join the discussion with a question, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. How critical was Phyllis Schlafly in the defeat of the Equal Rights Amendment in the Illinois legislature?
Well, I think I think ERA would have passed. I'm sure some of your younger listeners have never heard of the Equal Rights Amendment. It was an amendment passed by Congress in 1972 and then needed ratification by the states, 38 states. And within the by 1974, 30 states had passed ERA. And then the critical votes came in Illinois and some southern states, and Phyllis Schlafly was, without Phyllis Schlafly, ERA would have passed, and it would have passed in Illinois. The Illinois case is in fact quite fascinating, I think, in the divisions that occurred there.
Yeah, we don't have time to go into that, but that is a fascinating story that you tell in the book. Let's take one more phone call here this afternoon before we have to wrap up. Line 4, toll-free line in Normal. Hi.
Hello. I'm very interested in your caller's comments. My beloved professor at the University of Illinois would always remind us that there are about 1,000 different species of grass, and so there is not just one grassroots movement that can be effective in our country. I prefer to think that part of Phyllis Schlafly's success was the fact that she was backed by quite a bit of money. I'd also like to remind your caller that maybe when he does a follow-up on his story, he might want to look into the people who were supporters of Phyllis Schlafly and who she shunned right from the Right to Life movement. One of them was my mother, who was very active in New York from 1973 until she died in 1996. And when she had the opportunity to meet Phyllis Schlafly at one of the Right to Life annual marches, she was shunned. My mother was shunned by the great Phyllis Schlafly, and I don't think my mother was alone, except that my mother was not dressed in silk suits and things because she had no money. And so Phyllis Schlafly may be a heroine to some people, but she is certainly not a heroine to all. And I think she has done damage to many women, especially those who need child care, because I do not think that Mrs. Schlafly has supported any efforts from Ronald Reagan on to be sure that women who had children and had to work were able to get quality child care.
Well, thank you for that comment. I do want to correct this caller. Phyllis Schlafly did not have big money behind her, and I go in the book details through her own financial records the money that was involved in that campaign, and I also look at the financial support that the pro-ERA movement had. So I disagree with the caller on this. As for shunning her mother, I don't know that story. I think most of Phyllis Schlafly's followers were not wealthy women, and there are quite a few studies on this that show this. They were mostly middle-class women. So I disagree that that this was just wealthy women involved in this. The caller is correct that Phyllis Schlafly has opposed federal child care.
Mm. It's also interesting that the point that the caller makes is that you could be pro-life and support federal programs or government programs to help provide child care.
Yes, this is I think this is the Catholic Church's position. The Catholic Church is for child care and is also pro-life, and so I think there are different opinions out there. But Phyllis Schlafly has been adamantly opposed to federal support for child care, and so it sounds like this woman has differences with Phyllis Schlafly. I do want to tell the if I may tell the viewer that she should buy a copy of my book. I think she would learn a lot from it. It's not just a story of a heroine, but it also takes a critical look at a political transformation that we've encountered. And if I may add one other point, I think that Phyllis Schlafly has enjoyed success on the grassroots, and I think that this is a study that should appeal to the left because if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and I'm not saying it will be, it means that the abortion issue will be returned to the